Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Well, welcome to episode 2 of War Stories. And we're still with our same group of Zohan and Cartman and Fidel and Zohan's father, Salty, who is up next on this episode. And as we always say, this podcast is a place where first responders, soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen and coasties and police officers and firefighters and paramedics can get together and talk about their stories, talk about their war stories. That's what we call the events that we've been involved in that we don't necessarily talk about at parties because, let's face it, the way we talk about it would horrify the general public because there's things that we joke about. And people always ask, well, how do you joke about that? And we say, it's the only way we get through it. It's the only way we survive it. So this podcast is a place for us to tell those stories to each other and talk about them and debrief them and really get into the woods on what they meant and how they went down. But it's also a place where the average person who hasn't been through it can listen to it and understand at least a little bit of how their freedom is won and what these people go through to protect them. And they do it willingly. So, without further ado, we have Salty. Now, you're Zohan's father, yeah?
I am.
We've talked about that. You've been on our Menstalgia podcast. You were on the last episode of War Stories. And you did not serve in the military, but you were a police officer for 30 years.
That's
correct. You're now retired.
Retired, yes.
We also learned that you are a world record holder or a previous world record holder of some athletic prowess for deadlifting and whatnot. But we call you Salty because you run something called Project Salty. And I wanted to plug it a little bit and kind of have you explain anybody involved in the law enforcement military knows what, you know, calling someone Salty means. But you specifically started Project Salty, and that has got some pretty cool goals. And so I wanted to, before we go on, to have you talk to us about your nickname and where it comes from and what your project's all about.
Okay, so Project Salty was started, well, actually it's something we've talked about for a very long time, but came to fruition around October of last year. And what it was over my career in law enforcement, I tried my best to stay in the best condition I possibly could. Mm-hmm. For many reasons. Number one, my life would depend on it.
Right.
You know, the people I'm serving, their lives could depend on it. My partner's life, you know, may depend on it. And longevity as far as my family, my kids, my potential grandkids, you know, just being around. And I've just seen so many people really not take care of themselves.
Right.
So that was just my attitude throughout my career. Once I retired, I own a CrossFit gym, which was a side thing. But what we really wanted to do was to figure out a way to get some sort of push toward law enforcement, fire, first responders, mm-hmm. to just get in better shape and start to take care of themselves. Yeah, I mean, I could you know, tell you stories about, well, short story. Toward the end of my career, I had a bloodhound, and so we were used to track people, you know, victims,
right,
Alzheimer's, but also assholes,
right.
You know, I mean, that's what we were doing. When you
it's
know,
a
you
technical got, term, assholes.
Assholes, yeah. This is just generic. Right. Yeah. But anyway.
asshole is not gender specific. No. It's not race specific. They're just assholes.
Yeah. So So when you have a, you know, 50 plus year old guy with 40 pounds of gear on, and you've got your partner who's, you know, 45, 46 year old female with 40 pounds of gear on and two big bloodhounds.
And you're trying to keep up with those dogs who are not wearing any gear.
Who are not wearing any gear. And if anybody knows how a bloodhound works, they don't necessarily walk. When yeah. they're on a track, they Bye. Are on rails and they're moving and yep. you don't stop.
Right.
And it's, you know, the middle of summer and it's 100 degrees. That's just the way it goes. You have to be in shape. When I got my cover officers, who's just out of the academy or a year or two out of the academy, telling us we need to slow down or we need to stop because they need to swap out with the guy that's in the car, that's when I lose my shit. That's when I just can't take it anymore because I'm 50 fucking years old. And if you can't keep up with me, then we have a major problem. You're 23 years old.
Right.
Right. Well, that's the future.
Come home with your shield or on it.
Yeah. I mean, really.
Right.
That's the bottom line. And so when you start to experience things like that over time, you know, I just wish people would take things a little bit more seriously when it comes to fitness.
Okay.
And longevity.
Sure.
So back to Project Salty. So knowing what we know about programming and, you know, how to get the most out of the time, the limited time that people have to work out, we figured out a way to... post programming, basically, we tell you what to do mm-hmm. on your phone. It posts every day at 7 o'clock at night for the next day.
Okay.
And all you have to do is bring it up on your phone, show up to the gym, and work out. There's no.
So it's an app.
It's an app. Well, it's an app that we use, but it's our programming that we put into the app for okay. you to get it.
What's the app?
The app is called Wattify.
Wattify?
Wattify is the app.
How do you spell it?
W-O-D-I-F-Y.
W-O-D-I-F-Y, Wattify. Okay.
Right. Now, that's the app we use, but of course, you have to get into it through us, which is Project Salty.
Okay, so Wattify, they download the app, then they go and search Project Salty on the app?
No.
No.
No. So what you would have to do is you would have to search Project Salty either on Instagram, Facebook, or just the website, projectsalty.com, okay. mm-hmm. and then it'll send you right through it.
Okay.
You have to hit a sign-up button, you fill in your information, and then you'll actually get an email linking you to the app, and now you're in the system.
Okay. Damn, I'm going to have to do this.
And
it's
so...
It's legit.
No, I mean, literally, I'm going to have to do it. Yeah.
And so here's the kicker, because cops, military, firemen, they're a bunch of cheap asses.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. It's $19.99 a month.
Nice.
That's it. And so for
That's way cheaper. I mean, you spend a lot more than that on a personal trainer.
Oh, a hell of a lot more.
And not get anything out of it.
No.
Yeah. Right. So the programming is put in there. It explains what you need to do, how to do it. It has video links if you don't know what to do. And,
yeah, because like me, I gave up working out when I retired just because I didn't give a shit at that point. I was just mad. Mm-hmm. But now I'm 41 years old,
right.
And my daughter is, you know, getting ready to go into college, and my son, and I'm starting to stare the other side of 40 down, and I'm going, I forget working out to kick a bad guy's ass. Now I got to work out
for longevity,
to be around for my grandkids.
And that's something that I said a long time now, having a grandchild.
Yeah,
you know, I always said,
yeah, congratulations, Zohan, by the way.
I always said, you know, I'm going to be around. I'm the one that's going to teach her how to surf. I'm the one that's going to teach her how to do
Fuck
all these
yeah.
things, right? Just because I'm 55, 60, 65, right. what the hell does that mean?
Right, exactly.
Doesn't mean shit. So that was the intent behind it. And it's been in the works now. And I think we're about 50 people and a couple of trainers and actually a CrossFit gym that is now doing our programming.
Well, if you don't mind, we're going to give you some free plugs on our podcast from now on, because that's outstanding.
Yeah, I'll take it. Thank right you. Thank
Very
you.
Cool. And I honestly, it's cool that you're doing that for longevity and for police officers and all that kind of stuff, but it's also really bitching that you're doing that just for yourself. You know, you, this came out of a love of your career, and then seeing these officers and that just should be able to do better, should be able to keep up with you, should be able to do that for their own safety,
correct,
let alone for your fucking safety. It sounds like you were tired of working with people that were out of shape.
Yeah, I mean, especially with what I had to deal with. I mean, I was in a position where physical fitness had to be, you had to be up there. You were either staying up with the dog or you're not.
Right.
I mean, that's just the bottom line.
Right. The dog doesn't give a shit if you're in shape or not.
But aside from that, even not having that assignment, I would have done it anyway because it's the right thing to do. It's what we're supposed to do. When you're showing up to a call and you have to do what you have to do, they're not looking for, and I know this is going to sound funny, but they're not looking for the guy that looks like he's 20 pounds of shit and a 10 pound bag.
No.
That's not who they want.
No.
They want someone to take care of business, and as you should. That's what you signed up for.
Right.
That is what you signed up
for.
It
is what you signed up for.
Nobody forced you to do that shit. So And then, of course, as I got older, it started to be more about longevity. It started to be about being able to do what I want to do when I'm 50, 60, 70 years old and not have my kids take care of me.
Right. Well, the key word in first responder is first, right? We would frequently, and this got explained to me by my training officer, and I'm sure it got explained to him by his training officer, but you're the first one to show up. And yet the people that have already been there and seen everything go down up to that point are looking to you to make decisions about their fate when you don't have a goddamn shred of information.
Right.
So you show up and everybody's expecting you to have answers. Mm-hmm. You better be minimally competent physically and mentally.
Correct.
Or everybody's screwed.
Correct.
So I'm glad. It's Project Salty. Go check it out. It's on, you can, we've shared their video on our Facebook page. We're going to share a link, and we'll keep talking about it on all our future podcasts, but, it's Project Salty for anybody, but it started out geared towards first responders, and it's an app that will guide you through a workout, basically mm-hmm. a daily workout
7 days a week.
And let me tell you, you guys, it's a podcast, so you can't see, but I will share a video of, Salty working out, and God damn.
Put some good background music to it. Wow, chicka,
wow, wow. Oh, no. Which one?
I don't know. I'm going to make it good, but well, damn.
Yeah, my paparazzi's a pain in the ass. Let me tell you that.
Let me tell you. I've seen the workout videos, and all I do is cry out of shame. So we're here. You were 30 years law enforcement.
Yes.
You worked for Southern California police agencies. Do you care to say who?
The last 25 was 24 was with LAPD.
Okay, yeah. So you know LAPD is known for working everything from you know Beverly Hills to Inglewood. Well, not Beverly Hills because that's its own police department, but Bel Air.
Yeah, we don't go in Beverly Hills. Yeah, that's scary.
Screw that. I
don't
want to go
there. Some scary shit.
So 30 years, you must have seen some shit.
Yeah. You know, I look back. I probably have forgotten half the shit. But
well, yeah, I mean,
these guys remember more shit than I do.
I was saying, before we turned on the mics, you looked at these people, like, hey, Cartman and Zohan, and you're like, what should I tell? And they seem to like, you know, oh, tell this one, because it makes a big impression on us as young guys listening to a salty motherfucker tell his stories, and we love it. So that being said, the floor is yours. What's your story?
Okay, so a little history. Came on in 1987. Did my patrol thing for a few years, had some fun in patrol. Then in LAPD, ended up going to an undercover unit where I was basically an undercover officer buying and selling narcotics for about 3 years. Had some little operations and some very big ones that, you know, all ended well. In late 80s, I got a position in K-9 where I stayed in gang and narcotics division, but I was working a narcotic dog. So the investigation still continued. I just had a dog. And then the last 3 years of my career, we got bloodhounds to the unit. And so I started to work a bloodhound, now getting back to the patrol side, so to speak, even though I was still in gang and narcotics division, and we were just tracking people that were, you know, could be a missing child, could be someone that walked away from Alzheimer's, could be a robbery, homicide, double homicide suspects.
Right.
So that
as we said earlier, bloodhounds don't just search for assholes; they search for all kinds of people.
Oh yeah, we just give them scent and then just hang on because it's going to be a ride.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So anyway, that's my history. So here's one that still bothers me to this day because it was multi-agencies that were involved. So this is back during 9/11.
Okay.
So 9/11 happens. Everybody saw it. Well, maybe not. You know, well, who am I talking to now, right?
Yeah, right.
Everybody here saw it, but
everybody knows about it.
Everybody knows about it. So that happens, and at the time I'm working gang and narcotics division. We had at the time a division in LAPD called Anti-Terrorist Division. Mm-hmm. Don't know what they did. Don't know.
Wait, I'll edit this out if I need to, but you know.
No.
Okay. I ran Project Archangel.
Okay, so Archangel, yes.
Okay.
Yes, I know Archangel after 9/11 when that came about.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
yes. Okay. I do. So, yeah, so we had Anti-Terrorist Division, which was like the super secret spook squad within LAPD that followed, I don't know who they followed, communists maybe? I don't know. But anyway, 9/11 happens.
Right.
So
they were taking people to the Victory Motel and racing.
Right.
Sorry, LA Confidential reference. Yeah.
So anyway, that's what they did. 9/11 happens. And of course, that turned, you know, every major police department upside down, because I think in the end, we got caught with our pants down. And we quickly found out that we had a bunch of cells, terrorist cells, that were all over the country. But speaking for Los Angeles, we had a bunch that were functioning in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Whether they knew about it or didn't know about it, I don't know. But after 9/11, they ended up going through units looking for people that had surveillance experience and undercover experience, and we got transferred overnight. So I was one of, I don't even know how many.
You show up to work, and guess what? You're doing something completely different now.
I show up to work, and they say, hey, just so you know, you, you're being transferred to anti-terrorist division. You guys are going on 12 on, 12 off, until further. Report here.
Wow.
That's it.
That sounds like the green weenie.
So
what's the green weenie?
It's when the military fucks you.
No, in this case, it's the navy blue weenie. But, yeah, same blue concept. Weenie. The chief goes, "Hey, I got your back," and I know, chief, I feel you there.
With both hands, right?
Like, right. Right.
So that's what happens. So a few of us find out, and we all show up to a certain place, and there's a bunch of us there. We all know each other because most of us were working narcotics at the time, so we all, you know, surveillance.
It's a small circle.
It's a small circle, yeah. Surveillance teams, we all knew each other.
Right.
Even though we had spread out to other.
Like LA Impact and some of those guys?
Yeah. Yeah, so guys from Impact, HIDA.
LA Impact is a narcotics team that works, you know, with LAPD, and it's a task force, and then HIDA, high-intensity drug trafficking areas, are run by the DEA. So just, I'm trying to, for the listeners, I'm trying to.
So
we love our acronyms in the police department and the military. Jesus.
What's that an acronym for?
What's Jesus an acronym for?
Is that what you just said?
Yeah. That is
hey, let's
said.
Not bring that in. He's not involved.
Anyway, moving on.
Well, actually he was.
Well, yeah, he was. But
he was involved, actually, and you'll find out here in a minute.
Yeah. All right.
Because I was praying, to Jesus.
We'll get to Jesus in a minute. He makes an appearance in the story.
So we show up. We find out that we're broken up into teams. We're all given packages on cells that are here in Los Angeles. Go figure.
Wow.
And
just like that.
Just like that. Like, overnight.
Hey, guess what? All those terrorists that you didn't know about in LA, they exist, and here's their packet.
And here
we
their
just
packages.
Found out.
Like, that's like ripping the scales from your eyes instantly and just changing your entire worldview.
So this is why I say I don't know what ATD or anti-terrorist division was working at the time, but now the FBI is involved, and the FBI are giving us this information. So I can't speak for ATD, but what I found out as this investigation continued on is that, at least at the time, the FBI is just straight fucking incompetent.
Yeah, I always joke that FBI stands for famous but incompetent.
And I hate to say that, and again, I'm speaking for the time that I worked with them and for the operations that we worked.
Right.
But it was a shit show.
No, I know a couple of CHP officers and a couple of FBI agents that I would trust. The rest of them?
Yeah, and I know guys that you know, we spent time with that I liked, that were good, solid guys. But I'm telling you, for the period that I'm talking about and the people that were running it at the time, it was a straight shit show. And I think there was probably still a power struggle going on between, I have all this information and you really don't need to know. And that's what was happening. So everybody was kind of compartmentalized.
Right.
Instead of sharing the information, hey, we're all on the same side. If there's assholes here, we need to like find them now.
Yeah. And there was a ton of holdouts from Hoover's FBI. There were still guys that were Hoover's men. Yeah. They were all about, we're the FBI and you're not.
Right. So we're now in this big meeting and we're given all these packages of friggin' assholes. And, we're broken up into, like, this cell is going to be worked by A and B. And so we had A watch, B watch, which is, you know, 6
so
a.m. to 6 p.m.
That's why you're on 12s. 12 on, 12 off.
6 a.m.,
no,
6 p.m.
No days off.
No
all
days
regular
off.
Days off are canceled. Right. A and B, A watches him. It's stakeout. A watches him day, B watches him night.
That's
nobody
correct.
Goes home.
Nobody goes home. And, of course, we're cops, so we have a lot of questions.
Right.
Right? So as we're reading these packages, but they're not giving us any information. All they're saying is you just need to report to us with what they're doing.
Right. Okay. They're not going to tell you why you're watching them.
No. 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 So, and this is where the frustration started.
You think?
You think. So we watched a couple of cells, and we, you know, followed them to do, you know, some shady stuff. But then the one I'm going to talk about is the bad one.
Right.
So we get another package. I think we're about a month into it, maybe 6 weeks into it. We get another package. So we get off the person that we were working and we get on these guys, and we're in Venice, Venice Beach area.
Okay.
Right. And we just sit on them, 12 on, 12 off, 12 on, 12 off. They have the same patterns. You have two guys and one girl. And they have the same thing. You know, they go to this store. They walk over here. They walk over there. We got their cars. I mean, we got all this shit, right? So we're now about, like I said, maybe 6, 7, 8 weeks from actual 9/11.
Oh, this is pre-9/11?
Post.
Oh, it is. Okay.
We're post 9/11. Okay. So 9/11 happened, right? So we're now.
So it's 2 months later.
It's about 2 months later. Seven to eight weeks later. And again, I don't know what's true. I don't know what's not, because I only had the information that I had at the time. But at the time, they were talking about people that they were saying that there were other planes in the air when 9/11 hit, and that when Bush grounded everyone, that it saved a lot of lives.
And this is according to the FBI?
This is according to the information that we were given at the time. Yeah.
Okay.
So we started to get pictures of people that potentially were on other planes.
Wow.
Okay. One of the pictures we got was supposedly a Saudi pilot that was on a plane that was coming from somewhere in the Midwest or the East Coast to Los Angeles that supposedly got grounded somewhere in Texas, right? Or somewhere in New Mexico, somewhere there. Anyway, so we're given all, you know, again, this is just like a constant thing. We're watching these assholes move around.
Right, right.
And so there's no confusion. They're assholes.
Right.
Right. The way they behave, the way they acted, they're assholes. Right. So sitting on point one day, so we rotate through point.
Right.
Meaning,
and for everybody that doesn't know, point is, if you're on a surveillance, point is the person who actually has eyeballs on the target's vehicle, the target's front door. You can have six or seven other cars in radio distance, but the point man is responsible for watching the target with his actual eyeballs.
Correct. So it was my turn to rotate in. Here comes this guy walking across the street in front of me, guy that I've never seen before. Right. I look at him and I'm thinking, man, this fucker looks familiar, but I don't. You know, but he's not someone I've seen over the last couple of weeks, right? So
how do I know him?
How do I know him, right? And, well, let's just say what it is. I'm not trying to say they all look the same, but you know,
there's a similar physical characteristic that doesn't distinct, right?
Yeah, it's a mid-20s, Middle Eastern guy, you know, that, you know, dark hair, dark eyes. Right. Just, they all look the same.
Right. And, it's a Twinkie in a bag of Twinkies.
Yeah, I mean, this is just who I've been looking at for the last two fucking months, right? But he was different. So, that same day, as we were going through rotations on point, we found an old, package that had a picture in it, and it was the pilot
that we had warned about
like two weeks prior.
Right. Right. The Saudi pilot who got grounded in Texas.
Correct. Yeah. So, of course the fucking second we got that, we're on the phone. Our supervisor's on the phone to the FBI,
right,
saying, "Hey, this is who we think we got here. You know, blah blah blah. We can lock this place down."
Right.
No. Just leave it. Leave it the way it is. Let things continue the way they are. Just let us know what happens. Time out a second. We had three fucking planes go down.
Right.
You're saying that this guy was potentially on a fourth plane, or a fifth plane, or a sixth plane, or whatever fucking plane, and we have him in an apartment right now.
Right.
Here in Venice Beach.
Right.
We need to fucking break this door down and take his ass into custody and figure it out later.
Yeah, smash him.
Exactly. No. Just let us know what happens. So this thing goes for a couple more days.
And if you don't, if you're listening to this and you don't understand, that is one of the most frustrating things for real cops, is to sit and do nothing. When you know the guy you're looking at is a bad guy getting ready to do bad guy stuff.
Correct. I'm not waiting for the guy to do something and now I got him dirty and now we're going to take him down.
No.
Especially what happened.
Yeah, you've also talked about the mind frame at the time, right? Two months.
This is mass murder.
Yeah.
National security.
Right. Yeah.
Right. This guy was involved.
Yeah.
Right. And if he wasn't involved, the people that we're sitting on are involved because you guys put him on us, right?
Right?
And now he's in their apartment. He's fucking involved.
Right.
Everybody needs to get taken down. Right. We need to figure this out. So, man, this is frustrating.
I know.
Fuckers.
When you hear us go, God, I'm so frustrated. It's a visceral feeling to the fact that you were rendered impotent.
Yeah, and like I said, not to make things sound more important than others, but we're not talking about a dope dealer.
No.
Yeah, we're not talking about
this
a guy.
It's not a mugger.
That, no, it's not a mugger.
It's a fucking terrorist.
It's not a guy that's got 10 fucking kilos in the car, which may sound like a lot, but it's not that guy. It's a fucking terrorist.
Right.
They just killed 3,000 plus people.
Right.
We have a major problem here.
And it's one terrorist that was supposedly involved in killing 3,000 people meeting up with another group that supposedly is
connected.
Fucking unrelated, right. But now we've just connected them.
Correct. So this goes on for a few days. The guy never comes out again. He never surfaces.
Never.
Never. Well, 3 days. I mean, hasn't surfaced. We were in 24 on. All of a sudden, here he is. He pops out. So these motherfuckers had two black, I'll never forget this, two black VW Jettas that were identical.
Oh, yeah.
And they had two white minivans that were, identical.
Oh.
Right?
No reason for you to have two sets of identical
cars.
That's
not suspicious.
It's not suspicious.
Not at all. Right. So this guy gets in one of the Jettas, and he's on the road. So, of course, we, you know, keep point split. We start following him. They're like, beautiful, we're gonna take him. So we follow
and
him.
And having identical cars is a counter-surveillance accidental nightmare, let alone a deliberate counter-surveillance.
Right.
I mean, if you're working under a surveillance team and you know your target's got two identical cars, you're terrified of the switch.
Right. Now, and I'll get back to the other cars, because these other guys that I haven't even talked about yet are fucking dirty, too.
Right.
I just haven't said anything yet about them. So this guy goes. He gets on the freeway. He's a 5 northbound. And we hand off surveillance to an FBI surveillance team that picks him up.
Okay.
All right. FBI surveillance team takes him somewhere to, I don't know, somewhere north of the Grapevine. So he's somewhere in Bakersfield or just past Bakersfield. They get CHP to do a traffic stop on the guy. Beautiful, right? So, and we're getting info. We're back at the Venice pad, but we're getting info as to what's happening.
Okay, so you're getting real-time updates from the FBI team.
Yeah.
And the FBI team called in an airstrike from CHP to stop him and just see what's up.
Oh, it's even better.
Okay.
Yeah. So FBI then goes and talks to the guy. And the guy says, hey, I'm going to visit family up in San Francisco. That's why I'm going north on the 5 freeway. Oh, okay. So how about this? Can we make an appointment? And you come to the FBI office in San Francisco.
I'm sorry,
because
what?
We need to. Did everybody hear me?
They want him to make an appointment.
Yeah, because when you get up to San Francisco, we need to talk to you because of A, B, C, and D.
What? Wait,
so
they told. Okay, go on.
Yes, I need more rum.
Yeah, you do, because I.
So
moving on,
they let him go. They don't keep surveillance on him. And he goes up to wherever he goes to. And, I guess the next day, guess what? He didn't show up to the FBI office.
No. Mm-hmm.
And so we find out like 2 weeks later. Okay,
hold on. Let me get him my surprised hat.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
So a couple of weeks later, they find out that somehow they're pinging his phone somewhere in freaking Saudi Arabia. Right.
Weird.
Weird.
So weird how that happens.
Weird.
Wait. A Saudi pilot in the United States under suspicious circumstances takes off for Saudi Arabia after being contacted by the FBI. Who saw that coming? I don't know. Maybe
I can't make this shit up.
No, you can't.
I can't make
That's
this shit
the
up.
The phrase exists. You can't make this shit up because cops say you can't make this shit up.
Right. So anyway, so that was the beginning of my introduction to that little cell that we were working.
Okay.
Right. So now we're obviously ready to lose our minds. Right.
Right.
Because we can't take it anymore. We know these guys are dirty because of their behavior.
Right.
So they have a pattern where they go out. They come out at certain times. They take the one Jetta. Well, now they only have one left.
Right. Right.
They take the one Jetta. They go to restaurants. They have like, you know, just they'll sit there and not talk to anybody, not order food. They'll just sit there. We watched
again. Not suspicious.
Not suspicious.
At all.
We watched them do what we would call dead drops in bookstores. So these guys would go. There was a Barnes and Noble in Venice, so they would go to Barnes and Noble. They would go to either a certain books. A lot of the times it was with the magazines, but certain books or magazines. They grab a magazine, and you know how there's chairs there where you could, you know, look through a magazine in a bookstore.
Right, right.
They'd sit over there like they're looking through, you know, some mechanics magazine. And they'll put messages in there. They'll leave it. They'll put it back on the shelf. They'll leave, and then someone will come in later, pick up that magazine, get the message, and go. So we started to branch off of those guys when we were starting to see who was picking up messages. They were getting a steady income from Western Union. So we would follow them to Western Union. You know, I mean, there was just all kinds of shit. So they're shady, right?
Right.
What we were told is that these guys were facilitators, meaning that these guys were people that were making sure all of the parts were running,
right,
so to speak, in relation to other cells.
Right.
Right. That's what these people were. The other information we had was that somewhere in Southern California, we had a couple of suitcase nukes.
The information you had was that there were at least two suitcase nukes
unaccounted for
in LA.
That's what we were told.
Okay.
There was, and I don't remember the exact thing, but there were a bunch of suitcase nukes back from when Russia fell, and somehow they worked their way through the Middle East. Who the fuck knows? I don't even know.
Right.
Right. But this is the information we had, because what we were told is that another dirty bomb was going to go off somewhere in Southern California, in San Francisco, somewhere on the West Coast, a big city.
And a dirty bomb is a bomb that disseminates through the explosion radioactive material. It doesn't have a nuclear size explosion,
correct?
But the standard explosion disseminates enough radioactive material to actually poison water supply, people, cause cancer, all that kind of stuff.
Correct. Which is funny, because when you brought up Archangel, you know, part of Archangel's job was to be in highly populated areas.
Right. Project Archangel was identifying critical incident, critical targets.
Right. Where you had a lot of people looking for the one asshole in the crowd.
Exactly.
Yeah. So all that was going on at the same time. So we have this information. So a little bit on these two guys. These guys, the two guys, main guys that we were watching, were just dirty, dirty fucking people. They looked dirty. They probably smelled dirty. They were just dirty people. Right. Like they hadn't showered. Long, scraggly beards, messy hair. I mean, it really looked like they hadn't bathed in months, mm-hmm. right? But yet they're living in a condo
in Venice Beach,
right? So this goes on for probably about another month. We're sitting on these guys. And, you know, very frustrating, because we're giving them all this information. They're dirty. We're watching them do dead drops. We're watching them get money. We're watching them do all this shit. It's like, guys, how about we just take these guys down and put the screws to them? I mean, it's as simple as that. It's not like we're looking for something.
Right.
This is national security. We know they're dirty. We have enough. Let's take them down.
Police work.
No. Just keep watching them and just give us information. All right. So this one guy, one morning, Saturday morning, here he does. He shows up outside his condo. Haircut is clean as a whistle. Clean shaven. I mean, like a baby's ass, wearing all white. And he's got two suitcases. One of them is a small one. One of them is a medium one in his hand. We're like,
Went from looking homeless to looking like he's going to a job interview and has two suitcases,
or going to God,
or
okay.
You want to dress culture? That's what they do.
So you guys have, you military guys have experience with this. When you're going to go meet your maker,
jihad.
Yeah, you look your best.
Yeah,
it's absolutely like going to church.
Yeah.
So that was the first problem.
Not to interrupt you again, but the white garb in particular.
Oh, the white garb is
all in white. Yeah. He had white slacks on, white slacks on, white shoes, like a white long sleeve silk shirt. I'll never forget this.
White shoes is suspicious enough as fuck. Well, I'm just saying.
Unless it's Saturday Night Fever.
Or a Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation. Oh, those are the only two people. Everybody else fucking jihad. Okay. Yeah.
So this motherfucker gets into, so he has, like I said, a small suitcase and he has a medium suitcase. He walks out, goes down into grabs a Jetta, hops in that Jetta. We're like, oh, where's this guy going? He's going the opposite direction of where he goes every day.
Now, my question to you real quick before we move on is, what's your pucker factor at this point?
When I saw the way he was dressed,
right,
serious pucker factor. Because just think about this. This is their behavior for the last month.
Right.
This is the way they've looked for the last month.
Dirty, homeless, scruffy. Now you're looking for a suitcase nuke.
He's got two suitcases.
And this guy's clean cut.
Oh, I'll give you
head to toe white, carrying a suitcase.
So the pucker is starting. But it's Saturday morning.
Okay.
What the fuck is this guy doing? Right. All right. So let's follow this guy for a little bit. So thank God we got off the friggin' place and moved the whole squad with him.
Right.
Right. Instead of trying to split us up, which they have done in the past.
Right. They say, no, this is the one we want
to. We're going to follow this guy today. Mm-hmm. So he goes to a gas station, fills up in gas, drives up to the 10 freeway, hits the 10 freeway, eastbound. What the fuck is this guy going Saturday morning?
And it's completely opposite and out of his norm. And no, you guys have been on him for several weeks.
Oh, yeah. He just drives around town, around right. Venice, doing all of his drops and shit, right? So he's on the 10 freeway through Los Angeles, through East LA, out to Chino. We're like, what the fuck? Hits the 15 freeway, northbound on the 15.
Right, which everybody in LA knows.
Oh, fuck.
Vegas,
goes
baby.
To Vegas.
We're going to Vegas, right?
If you're in LA, there's only one reason to get on the 15.
That's when the pucker factor hit. Because the way he looked,
right.
His behavior,
what's his
what he
target?
Had in his hand, that was it. That's where we're like, oh, shit. Right? So they, now we're trying to scramble.
They don't go to Vegas for strip clubs.
They don't.
Yeah.
No.
Bro.
Yeah. So
we go to Cheetahs. It's amazing.
Yeah. So we're on the 15 North. Of course, our supervisors are on the line with the FBI. We have an airship on us because we cannot lose this guy. Not no, that it's right. going to be hard to lose him on the 15 once
wing?
You get through the desert. We had fixed wing and we had airships. They were okay. rotating in and out. We used DEA fixed wing mm-hmm. at one point mm-hmm. As our airships were refueling and, you know, they were handing off.
Right.
So we're trying to get a team to pick us up somewhere out in the desert, Barstow, just to make sure we don't want to get burned, but we didn't get burned. I mean, we were
right.
We're just strung out and, you know, yeah. airship.
Getting burned is for TV cops.
Yeah.
no, I'm not kidding.
No.
Like,
no,
if you right. have a good you're surveillance right. team, you ain't getting burned.
Yeah, we're not getting burned. So we get to, we're going to Vegas. And so he gets off on Las Vegas Boulevard, and we're working our way up the strip. So he gets off around McCarran Airport, and he's working his way up the strip. And so we're trying to now get ahead of him because
right.
we're in surveillance.
Right.
So we're trying to think of what he's doing. So we had people paralleling on different streets
right.
in case he made a right
sure.
or made a left. We had multiple people in a line in case he decided to pull over. The primary car can pass him and the
right.
second one can park and get off.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, so anyway, so we're moving down Las Vegas Boulevard.
We don't want to give away too many techniques.
Yeah, I know. We're talking to cops though. Right. Anyway, so he gets to the Monte Carlo. And which I don't even think is there anymore.
It's gone,
right?
Yeah.
My favorite stripper was there. Got
so we get to
a couple weeks ago. It's gone.
Okay.
Yeah.
He gets to the Monte Carlo, and I was I don't remember if I was number two or number three in line. So he makes a left turn, goes to the Monte Carlo. Our primary pulls over because there's a lot of cars in there. Easy place to hide. I shoot past,
mm-hmm.
and I go into the multi deck. And the way the Monte Carlo was set up is that when you pulled into the Monte Carlo, there was a big horseshoe
mm-hmm.
Where you would either valet or you would stop there to go in and come
right.
back out, you know, that kind of stuff. And it was facing a multi-deck.
Okay.
So I got into the multi-deck and started to work my way up the multi-deck so
right.
I can get an eye on him from the top looking down.
Okay. So you're trying to head to the top of the parking structure because you
so
know that's going to give you a vantage point with a
right.
bird's eye view of that. Horseshoe roundabout in the front of the hotel where he might go.
Correct.
Okay.
So I get to, I think, like the second or third floor, just leave my car, come running out to get to the wall so I could look down.
Right.
And sure as shit, I'm looking right at the guy. So I'm looking straight down into his car through the front windshield. Just kind of happened that way. Right. So he's sitting over there, and I remember looking down. I mean, it's like looking, you know, out this window right here. It's clear as day.
Right.
I have my binoculars so I can see what's in his hand. That's how close I am. I'm looking down, and he's not doing anything. He's just sitting there. What I do notice is that the smaller of the two suitcases is on the passenger seat, right?
Mm.
So I can see that.
So he's got it within arm's reach.
Yeah, and he's just sitting there. He's not doing anything. And I'm trying to figure this out. So in the meantime, everybody else is setting up. So we got guys on foot. We got guys getting into the, you know, into the casino.
Now, real quick, at some point, are you watching him with the suitcase on the seat next to him going, he could fucking detonate this thing at any moment?
When he started to pray, yes.
Okay, so we're not there yet, so go on.
Yeah. So as everybody's kind of shuffling around, I see him start to pray. And so he starts to rock back and forth. And
how big's the pucker factor?
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever had a pucker factor bigger?
No.
All right.
No. If 10 is a pucker factor, this was probably 20.
It's the point at which you go, this is it.
Yeah. So
the point at which your son, who told us a story on the last episode, said, this is it.
Hmm?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I put it out and I said, hey, guys, This guy's praying. this guy's fucking praying. I know it's funny now.
Guys? He's praying. Rocking back and forth, like, praying.
Yeah.
We're about to ride this wave.
Yeah. So what I did...
now would be the time. Just saying.
So we had... So thank God we had good, salty supervisors that had been around a very long time at the time. We had two people out on foot, and one of them was actually en route to go kill him.
God, I fucking love this story so much right now.
It's simple. I kept my eye on him, and at the same time, I actually called home.
Right.
Yeah. So.
No, okay. We'll take a minute.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's what this show's for.
Take your time.
The moment you identify that you might not see your family again because of your job.
Yeah.
And you're willing to accept that is a...
Yeah, so I called and to say goodbye, basically.
Right.
To my wife, the kids.
Right.
And, you know, it is what it is because I'm committed now. Right. So there's nothing else I can do. So we had a guy on foot, actually one of my partners in K-9, that was walking up behind him.
And that makes you feel good, though. You know that
guy. I
knew
he was going to shoot him.
You knew, yeah.
I knew he was going to kill him.
Right.
So he was walking up on him, and then all of a sudden he stops praying, and he just pops the door open and gets out. Well, the suitcase is still in there. So we're like, whoa, stand by. Stop. So he gets out. He goes walking into the casino and leaves the truck or the car. So now we're fucked.
Right. You've got a car.
Like, oh, fuck. So now we have this car.
Yeah. You got to deal with the car and you
got
to deal with the
car.
Yeah.
Now we got, what the fuck is he doing?
Right.
You know, so. Yeah. So it's bad. So so he goes in. We have people on foot in there. We haven't told Monte Carlo yet that we're there.
Oh, fuck them!
Fuck everyone at the Monte Carlo.
I mean, no, but seriously, well, at that point,
you can't.
We're fucked.
Yeah, you can't.
We're fucked because
you're too deep.
Yeah, if we say something,
panic.
We are going to create a mass panic.
Not only that, but you don't know if he's got somebody in the inside,
which he did,
of course.
Yeah. So we were like, it was actually pretty bad.
Yeah.
Of course, this whole time, we're trying to get another surveillance team there because now we're spread pretty thin.
Right.
We've got...
Are you calling Vegas Metro? And-
Dude, we've got fucking cars parked on Las Vegas Boulevard, abandoned, because we're trying to get people on foot.
Right.
And there's nowhere to go. It's Vegas Boulevard. It's fucking traffic. And it's like, hey, fuck.
Yeah, try to park and walk anywhere in Vegas when you're not chasing a dude with a suspected dirty bomb. And it'll take you a while.
Yeah, so... It was funny now, looking back.
Of course.
It looked like there's like people just left their cars.
Right.
Like in the middle of the street.
Right. It's like a rapture happened.
Because that's exactly what happened. It was like a rapture. There's fucking cars everywhere.
Yeah,
nobody.
Exactly.
Right.
Fuck it.
Right. So that's exactly what it looked
like.
Pull
my car, bitch. Tow it. Right. I don't care.
So so we ended up following him in. The guy goes in there. He goes up to the desk.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, some blonde female, blue-eyed female, comes walking up next to him.
And they she knows him?
They know each other. And now we're like, what the fuck is going on? Right? So they talk for a little bit. He comes back out, grabs the little suitcase, grabs the big suitcase that I guess was in the back seat, which I couldn't see, grabs them both, goes back in there, goes, hooks up with her again. Now they're like in this lobby-ish area.
Right.
Right? And they're just standing there talking. Okay. So I work my way down. And now most of us are in or around on foot in the Monte Carlo, right? So they start walking to the elevator. I'm like, well, he hadn't seen me, so fuck it, I'll get in the elevator with him.
Mm-hmm.
So we get in the elevator together, and she's got like this accent, but it's not Middle Eastern. And
it's fucking Chechnyan or some shit like
fucking
that.
Fucking Russian.
Ah! Okay.
Right? Yeah.
Made me throw my pen. That's how mad.
Blonde hair, blue eyed. Yeah. Fucking Russian accent. It took me a minute, but Russian. Follow him up to a floor, get him into a room. So now we got the room bedded down.
All right.
I stay in the hallway. We finally get a surveillance team to come and relieve us, which happens to be an FBI surveillance team from Vegas.
Made the story terrible.
Okay. So they take over in the hallway. The beauty of the FBI is they wired the shit out of that fucking room.
Well, they do have all the toys.
They do have all the toys. So they were able to get a lot of information that was going on in there that, of course, I don't know about.
Okay.
So we get a break for the night. We come back up the next morning. We're staying in Vegas, right?
Right.
We get up the next morning. We pick them up again, mm-hmm. right? Just bizarre behavior. Goes down for a walk. They walk over to, they get their car. They drive to McCarran Airport.
Mm-hmm.
They take video of McCarran Airport.
Mm-hmm.
They come back. Then they go and walk over to New York, New York. Go figure. Right?
It's a good thing there aren't two World Trade Center facades on that fucking. They'd be like, bro, we get to do a second time.
And they're videotaping. And they're videotaping the outside of New York, New York.
Oh, right? Okay. And for those of you that don't understand, you look for prior acts. You look for intel gathering when it comes to these kinds of things. And having a bad guy whip out a video camera for no reason and point it at a structure is very terrifying.
Right. Right. So they did that. Just behavior like that. Finally worked their way back into the Monte Carlo. And then the male goes to the bathroom.
Okay.
Now one of the guys, I was outside. One of the guys follows him in. He goes to the bathroom, takes a piss, washes his hands. When he throws the paper away, he drops a disc in the trash. Right. So follow him out. We stay in, a couple of us stay close by the bathroom, start to pick people up as they go in.
Right.
Sure as shit. About maybe 5 minutes later, some Korean dude, which we found out later.
Okay.
Korean dude goes in, washes his hands, reaches down into the trash, pulls out the disc.
Motherfucker.
Yeah. And then he's gone. So now we're split up again.
Is it a CD?
Another dead drop. It was a CD.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a CD. So. Anyway, that shit went on for like 3 days.
In Vegas.
In Vegas, right? And then we finally pick this asshole up, and now he's coming back. So nothing happened other than whatever videotaping, whatever FBI found out that was going on in the room, whatever discs were handed off.
Right.
What we did find out is that female was the daughter of some Russian crime boss from the East Coast. Her security detail were Koreans. So they were all... So they were all connected. I mean, we didn't know this.
No, of course you don't know at the time. You have to find out in the debrief.
Yeah. So we have all this now. We're on our way back. And we're following him back. And here he is on the 15 freeway coming back. And this is where it's just like, I'm just done with all this. FBI decides that they're going to take him down when he gets back to Venice.
Okay.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to take him down like when he's on
the middle
highway
of 15
in the Mojave Desert.
Smash his ass with no problems.
Exactly.
No, wait till he gets into a populated area where he's at home and you have no idea what he's got in his
place. What he's got. Yeah. So they decide that they're going
to fucking take him out on the 15 and write a rollback. Anyway. A rollback is a warrant that lets you go back into the place where the guy lives after you smash him.
It makes too much sense.
Makes too much sense.
Yeah,
we wouldn't take him down
right way.
In the middle of the Mojave Desert, right? Yeah, we'll just take him down in a condo complex with fucking thousands of people around.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So we get back to the place. He pulls over. Here come, all the FBI guys. They take him down. They go upstairs with him into his apartment. We stay down because we're not part of it. We're just a surveillance team.
Right. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks. Fuck we'll off. Take care of it from now.
Right.
And here is the end. The end is that they come back down.
Yeah, if you wanted a satisfying ending.
Yeah, here's the satisfaction.
You ain't getting it.
Right. So they come back down, and they're not in custody. I'm like, what the fuck? Where are these people? Yeah, and I don't remember. I want to say that it was somewhere in Long Beach, or I'm not sure where. We're going to be going down to Long Beach tomorrow. We'll be interviewing them. Wait, time out. Where are these guys now? They're in their apartment. They're in their condo. Okay. And what exactly are they doing? Well, they explained it to us. So these guys had one room that had something like 6 or 7 computers.
What?
Right. So they were exactly what they thought they were. They were facilitators of some sort, right? Where are the computers right now? They're upstairs. So let me see if I get this straight. So these guys are coming to Long Beach for a meeting tomorrow with these computers for you. Yes, they'll be there.
Bullshit. Bullshit.
Oh, no. They showed up.
With
different computers.
I'm not saying bullshit.
No,
I'm,
no they showed bullshit. Up with different computers.
No, they showed up with those computers or whatever they wiped fucking them. Had. They're yeah. nothing.
Wiped.
Yeah,
wiped
right.
them. Yeah, and that was it. Yeah. And so whatever information they got was, who the fuck knows?
It was 24 hours old.
Yeah. These guys were in the wind about 3 days later and never saw them again.
All back to Saudi.
Who the fuck knows where yeah, they came knows, from? So. Yeah.
And you wonder why the FBI has no idea why the Vegas shooter did what he did.
And again, you know, I like to say that everybody got caught with their pants down.
No, some people bent over and grabbed their ankles.
Yeah. But that's now, just...
why do you think that? Why do you think it was a politically motivated fear that caused them not to hook him up and take his shit and
no.
sweat him? Or no. was it...
I think if that happened today and they didn't do it, it would be politically motivated.
Okay.
Because of everything that has happened. And of course, if you're doing something like that, then it's because they're Muslim, not right. because they're fucking terrorists.
So, but back then, was it a calculated risk?
I think it was incompetence. Huh. That's really what I think it was. I really think it was incompetence because when we would have these debriefings and ask all of these questions, we had the deer in the headlights looking back at us.
Well, I mean, and to be fair, at the time, the FBI was doing bank robberies and
right.
they were doing kidnappings
and that's,
they were accountants more than they were cops. If you had a degree in business administration or accounting, you were right. going to go far in the FBI.
Mm-hmm, right.
They were not geared towards actual boots on the ground law enforcement.
And that's why I say they got caught with their pants down. Because I think, you know, again, and I don't know what happens at the U.S. government, sure. but when all that shit happened, we were not ready for it.
No, I worked undercover and I worked with feds, and they all, when you bring up the FBI, DEA, ATF, they all roll their eyes when you bring up the FBI because the FBI are the highway patrol of the federal law enforcement arm.
Yeah. So it was a rough, so I ended up doing that now for, we went on different cells. There were multiple cells because we had multiple surveillance teams on multiple cells.
Well, we are going to have multiple episodes because goddamn I'm hooked, but I hope they don't all
write a book about
with
this
the
shit.
Same bullshit. They probably do though.
They do.
Yeah. Isn't that terrible? But you know what? You stopped something. You stopped something.
I don't know.
You
I don't know what we stopped.
What you stopped, we don't know. But that's mm-hmm. just my training officer always told me, look for the green Twinkie in the bag full of marshmallows. You know, it's you stopped something.
Yeah, all I know is I didn't get vaporized in the Monte Carlo. That's a good thing.
So did that forever alter your perception? Yes,
absolutely.
It can't not, right?
Mm-mm.
It's a world-changing moment.
It is. It is. Not enough that 9/11 wasn't a world-changing moment, but that's a whole other story.
Right.
You know, I mean, the whole 9/11 thing.
Well, people that were on the job, and on the job meaning involved in police work or military or whatever, when 9/11 happened, it was a bucket of cold water. It was Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
It was Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
And
yes.
It changed a lot of people. I know a lot of people that...
Call.
Say that again?
I still remember getting the phone call when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
I got a frosh call.
You know what's interesting that you bring that up? So I'm going to have him on. Hopefully you can come back, mm-hmm. Salty, for another episode. Because, we talked about my father being a cop and, you know, Zohan, your father's a cop. I want to do a father-son episode. It'd be kind of fun to get the two-generational perspective on it. But I remember where I was, and my wife came in to tell me, mm-hmm. you know, what had happened. She says, somebody just flew a plane into the World Trade Center. I said, what, like a Cessna? It was 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it was an accident.
Right.
Yeah,
she goes, well, sure. I said, what, like a Cessna? She goes, no, like a fucking 747. I'm like, bullshit. I thought nobody flies a plane.
Like, how do you miss the building?
Right, right, right. And then she goes, no. So I got up out of bed to prove her wrong. And when I got up out of bed and I walked into the living room and I'm trying to make heads or tails of what's going on. And that's when the second plane hit. So I watched that happen live. My old man had worked for LAPD, as you did.
Mm-hmm.
And then subsequently went to work for the state of California doing training for emergency operations, training the emergency management system and critical incident command and anti-terrorism, stuff like that. And I will never forget calling him at 6:15
mm-hmm.
and waking him up. And he was, you know, very sleepy. And I said, hey, Dad. He goes, yeah, what's wrong? I said, somebody just flew two planes into the World Trade Center. And without... I told my wife she was full of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I said, no, they didn't. I got up. I called my dad. And I said, somebody flew a plane into the World Trade Center. And without missing a beat, he says, wow, they finally did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what? And then we subsequently had a conversation where in emergency management in anti-terrorism circles, they had discussed the fact that a fully fueled jet would function as a giant fucking missile in the wrong hands. And all they were doing was waiting for somebody to have the balls to fly it into a building. And it that's why they finally did it.
It's wild.
Yeah. You know, when it happened, go figure. My wife was working out and she was in our little, we had a little home gym and she was watching TV and I just got out of bed and she called me and she said, yeah, they just, I guess a plane just hit the World Trade Center. And I remember I walked in and I looked up at the TV and I saw the Pentagon burning. Right. And I thought she was crazy.
And you're like, why the fuck?
I go,
is the
that's not the World Trade Center. Right. That's the Pentagon. Right. She goes, no, they said the World Trade Center. And I said, no, that's the Pentagon. What are you talking? Because if one hit, then that hit, then another one hit.
Right.
And I remember looking at it and I'm like, oh, okay, what's, and then they shifted back.
Right.
And then you could see the World Trade Center on fire. And then the second plane. Yeah. No, then the second plane hits.
Oh, okay.
The second plane hits. And that was right
that's
away.
When you knew.
I remember that because all three of us were in there because I remember walking in because I was getting ready for school.
Yep.
And I'm like, why the fuck are these two? Because I remember him doing something else besides not, because I remember her working out.
Right.
And he was doing something else. But I'm like, why are they in there just staring at the TV? So I remember them talking about it. So I walked in and pretty much maybe within 5 or 10 seconds after I'd walked in and they're glued. So I look up and then that's when the second one hit.
Yeah.
And even at school, when I went to school, that's all I was on.
Yeah.
That was it. Everyone had their TVs on.
There's pivotal moments. Like the Challenger. Yeah. We watched the Challenger blow up live in the classroom.
Right. Yeah.
Everybody watched the. Everybody remembers where they were when the planes hit the World Trade Center. Yeah. There's watershed moments. The North Hollywood shootout. You know, the old road in Newhall with the CHP. There's a lot of these incidents that, whether they're small and affect you statewide or big and affect you nationally or huge and affect you globally, there's watershed events. And we all remember where we were when we saw them.
Yeah, the first time I saw Cartman take his shirt off was pretty bad.
Wow.
And he didn't even have to leave to get that abuse.
The first time I took my shirt off in front of you, I was in a lot better shape.
Wow.
And yet?
Yeah, you know, it's just a shame that this is just where we're living today.
Yeah.
And this was back then. So today, man.
Well, and again, at least your son's story last episode ended with the guy being in a colostomy bag.
That's a good thing.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Your story ends with, I don't know what the fuck happened.
Which, I don't know.
Unfortunately.
I don't know what the fuck happened. By the way, there's two suitcase nukes somewhere.
There's two suitcases somewhere, and I don't know what's in them.
Yeah.
And
that goes to what we said about the Cassandra in Greek mythology. We know that they're bad guys doing bad guy shit, and we can't do anything about it until it happens. So that is the curse of this job, but we still do it. So I appreciate you sharing that story. As much as it's frustrating to me, and I'm going to go home and like punch a wall a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah.
Still a badass
aim
story.
For the stud.
It is a fucking amazing story. And knowing that you had that story in your hip pocket and knowing that prior to turning on the microphones, you're like, what story should I tell?
Of course you tell that story, goddammit.
I don't know. I probably forgot half the shit that happened.
You know what's funny is we do that. We tell stories. This is one of the reasons the show exists because we tell those stories to each other. We're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. And everybody goes, not yeah, whatever.
Well, he tells me that all the time. And I'm like, why does anybody care?
Right.
I mean, really?
They do.
I know.
They do care.
We do.
And you know what? It's a difficult story to tell. I mean, obviously there comes a moment in the story that has nothing to do with massive amounts of people dying. It has to do with you saying goodbye to your family in case.
Yeah.
And that's an emotional part of that story that nobody else is going to tell but you, because it was a very personal moment. And I appreciate you telling that part of the story, even though you don't have to.
Yeah, I actually thought about not telling that story for that reason, because I didn't think I could hold it together right around.
Did. You held it together great.
I tried.
I tried. But that part of it, that's why this show exists, is because you don't understand that the people, the men and women on the front lines, the people that stare down the barrel of the gun every day, it takes its toll. You know, you can only pick up so many dead bodies or, you know, arrest so many bad guys for the third or fourth or fifth time, or see a bad guy about to do bad guy things and be unable to do anything about it without it affecting your psyche, and to the point where you're like,
it's
just
tough.
Fucking kill them all. Just fuck. I don't care. Just kill them all. I don't care. I don't care. I just don't want to deal with this shit anymore. So kill everybody. You know?
Yeah,
so I appreciate you telling that story. Anybody, Anybody have any questions for that? Because I think he, I have no question. He covered that.
That was amazing.
Wow. I was like a movie. I'm sitting here going, what happened next? And then.
So there's 12 other guys that have that story too.
Yeah. None of them were standing on the top of the parking structure calling home. So
no, I appreciate you. Not that I know of.
I appreciate you telling us that. And, I appreciate you being on. Would you come on again?
Sure.
We'll plug Project Salty as much as you want. Hell, I'm going to probably try and join because my fat ass needs some salty ass kicking.
There you go.
You do. So,
fuck you. So
coming from you. What the hell?
You've seen my scores in the gym. I still kick people's ass.
Oh no. See, that's the thing. I can still kick people's ass even if I'm out of shape. I just can't do it for long periods of time.
He's pretty ballsy for the position he's in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever.
The position, like bent over with his
thing? I should say the state that he's in.
The state. I like that. Sorry. Well, we're all in the state of California, so we're all fucked. Well, I appreciate coming on, and this podcast exists so that you guys, again, can listen to these stories, and we don't tell these stories to shock you. We don't tell these stories to amaze you. We don't tell these stories to brag. We don't tell these stories to give ourselves a pat on the back. We tell these stories so you guys understand what goes into keeping you safe. An old quote is, we sleep safe in our beds because rough men stand ready to do violence against those who would do violence against us. And without that sort of quote-unquote aggressive behavior that gets constantly labeled toxic, you're going to get steamrolled. You're going to get steamrolled by bad guys ready to do bad guy shit. We call them goblins for a reason. So I want to thank you. Mm-hmm. For being on the show. Thank you for sharing that story. And thank you guys for being here and giving Salty a forum in which he can tell that story.
Thanks for having me.
Check out Project Salty. Is it ProjectSalty.com? What's the website? Salty, yeah. ProjectSalty.com.
Yes.
And you have a Facebook page?
Instagram.
Insta-chat.
Instagram is Salty Operator, right?
Salty Operator.
Salty Operator. Salty Operator on Instagram. And the Facebook is just Operation Salty, right?
Project Salty.
Project Salty. Yeah. And I will share a link to Project Salty on the Manstalgia page.
Thank you.
And I will share all your videos because your asshole video is amazing. You keep putting them out. I'm going to put them up because they're amazing.
It's my paparazzi that won't stop. I can't get a word.
Hey, you know what we should do is we should share that video that I posted to you in that bodybuilding competition.
That's not me. You can post that. But that's not me.
All right. Well, again, we thank you, and we're going to continue to share these stories as long as you're continuing to keep listening to them. So until our next episode, enjoy, and we'll see you next time.